Good evening, everyone. This is term three, session six. It's the end of term three. And we had got to Parak Zayin, Pasuk Yud Tes, which is chapter 7, verse 19. And where did we end off with last time? One of the things that we talked about in verses 16 and then 17, and then to a certain extent verse 18 as well, was this idea of don't become overly righteous. It's a very difficult thing to understand because Solomon was a particularly righteous individual, the son of an extremely righteous individual. How can he preach over righteousness as a bad thing? And if you remember, what we concluded at the end was that if an individual starts grasping at overt righteousness and starts working on every minutiae of the detail of what he's doing to the point that he himself considers himself a very high-ranking tzaddik, what happens when there's something that he doesn't understand? Or if suffering comes to him, and after his cheshbon and nefesh, when he sits down and makes an accounting, he simply can't see that it's fair. Then he may actually fall into something which is akin to a crisis of faith. Now, the truth is that God's not done anything wrong. It's just this particular individual cannot fathom God's ways fully. So if the individual is neiter, is inclining towards these ideas of becoming hyperfrom, but at the same time also harbours questions as to God's providence, and he doesn't have a simpler, more perfect faith, or a fuller faith, it doesn't have to be simple, but it can be more replete, then frankly it's better he doesn't become so righteous. Because his righteousness may be used as a tool by the Yetzer Hara to trip him up later. Very interesting idea. Basically, avoiding a crisis of faith is important. That is a theme which he said here. And it is also a theme which he's going to repeat in the next perek as well. In the eighth perek, especially the end of the eighth perek, is talking about the concept of avoiding crises of faith. So this is something which obviously Solomon talks about a lot through Keheles. And it's something which he says that when you get to very high level, high ranking levels of tzidkus, very high levels of righteous behavior, there is a yetzer hara to try to say, well, what is going on? You know, how come that happened? As if somehow you have remit to understand that. And we concluded that if that's the way that you have an inclination, better you just tread a stabler path. What did we learn? Something I wanted to share from Rabbi Bernstein, Zeicher Tzaddik Livracha, on this, a very beautiful idea. If you have a look at the letters of the first letter of the Torah, the last letter of the Torah, the first letter is base for Bereshis and then Lamed for Yisrael. So pronounce base Lamed. It says a beautiful thought. I can't remember where he quoted it from. It says if you look at the letters before and after base and Lamed, before base and Lamed is Aleph and Chof, which spells Ach. And after Lamed, and after Beis and Lamed is Gimel and Mem. Gam. Gam Ach, Ach Gam. Also this also. It's a very beautiful idea and it was worth coming for this moment. The Torah has set limits and set boundaries as to laws that it gives. And that's the Beis and the Lamed, the first and the last letter, the all-encompassing content of the Torah. But you know what? There's letters before the Torah. Aleph and Chof, Ach, this, what does that mean? If you want to take on a stringency, a chumrah, something above and beyond what the Torah has called for, but you're doing it l'shem shemaim, you're doing it purely to serve a Kodesh Baruch Hu, the Torah has got the flexibility, the elasticity to accept within its framework this additional chumrah. Conversely, if you need to take on a kula, a leniency that goes within post the Torah, not as far as the Torah has told you to go, something a bit easier, but you're doing it purely l'shem shemaim, not because you feel overcome by the Torah's pressures on you, but because of the situation you are in, the best way for you to serve a Kodesh Baruch Hu is to take on this kula, gam. Gam ach. You can go either which way with the Torah. You can go a little bit more stringent. You can go a little bit more lenient, obviously within the Torah's framework. And the Torah accepts both of those ways. Key has to be with Yerushalayim. If you take on a chumrah because you believe the mitzvahs somehow aren't enough for you, or you're greater than what the Torah usually postulates, or you feel as if you'd only really be frum if you do this, then it's not a chumrah at all, it's a mishagas. If you take on a kula, saying, you know, I'm not really there, and it's not right for me, and the shoe's got to fit the foot, and frankly, it seems like a very difficult challenge, and maybe one day, it's also shtus. You take them on for l'shem shemaim concepts, it's 100% kosher. Of course, how will you know? Aselach harav. Make for yourself a rov, who has to be an external guide to be able to advise you correctly as to the right path to take within the Torah's framework. All this to avoid a crisis of faith. This is something Solomon is going to be talking about quite a bit as we go weiter through these psukim. Let's see some more. It's got to be one of, if not the, most favourite psukim for me personally in the entire Megillah. What a special pasuk. I've been waiting to get this one. It's a really good one. What an amazing, this is so good. I know this is a shameless plug, but if you haven't yet heard the Yonah Shir, which is available on Gem, on the Gem site and on Study of the Torah Way, where we go through every verse of the 48 verses of Yonah as an expression of the concept of reincarnation and of a life mission and the path of the soul in the world, you've got to hear that as background data for this. He's going to be pulling out some ideas here from the Yonah Shir, from the Gra and the Elshach and the Medrash on Yonah. He's going to be saying things, again, so Solomon, he's just got it all. The whole Torah just laid out so easily for him. He'll just pluck the most esoteric, complicated, involved ideas and weave them into a pasuk of beauty, expecting you just to like hold cop. It's just if you haven't heard the Yonah Shir, you've got to hear that. And then come back to this pasuk. So here goes this pasuk. Ha-chachma ta'iz l'chacham. Wisdom is a fortress, a stronghold, a castle for the wise. Ma'asara shlitim asher hayu ba'ir. More than 10 rulers that are in the city. I mean, you know, it's clearly encrypted. It makes no sense. It's just like, you know, some would look at it and say it's gibberish. Others would say, no, that's clearly alluding to something that's allegorical. But what does he mean? What's even basic pshat? There's no pshat in this. It doesn't make sense. The words is like, you know, we got to unravel it. Wisdom is so strong that no power can actually conquer it. No power can overcome the idea of wisdom. Like maths. You know, no crazy dictator can say, I want to bring down the idea of maths. You can't. It's an abstract truth, which is just real anywhere. So too wisdom. But how do you know? How do you know that you can't shatter wisdom? Well, the 10 rulers that are in the city, they can't do it. What? Background data. We have to go background. Gemara Shabbos, Peizayin Amud Beis. Very famous Gemara, 88b. Moshe Rabbeinu went upstairs to get the Torah from Shemaim, right? And the Melachim were none too pleased. Have you pinch our Torah? You know that? Kodesh Baruch Hu says, no. Argue against them. Why shouldn't they keep the Torah? Why should you get it? Because I'm scared to speak to them. They'll kill me with their breath. The very interface with Malachim will kill. It's too intense and experience. She says, don't worry. You hold on to my kisei kavod. You hold on to the throne of glory. It'll protect you. And you go answer them up. You explain why it is the Torah should go down to the physical world. Says the Rambam, Maimonides, in the Mishneh Torah, Yesodei HaTorah, Perek Zayin. And he says, he lists there 10 orders of Malachim by name in a way that today we don't really have a lexicon for the species of Malachim. There's all different species of Malachim. They all have different roles and they look different and they do different things. And he lists 10 archetypal species, like orders of Malachim, not anatomy, but what's the right word? Paleontology, basically. Ordering them up. And he says there, what are the 10 rulers that are alluded to in this verse? The Rambam explains what the 10 rulers are of this verse in Keheles. Which is why I'm bringing it. And he says the 10 rulers allude to the 10 classes of angels who could not harm Moshe Rabbeinu because of the koyach of his Torah. The wisdom of Moshe Rabbeinu was able to stand up more than the 10 rulers that are in the city. The 10 classes, the 10 species, the 10 types of high-level angel that are in the city of heaven. And wisdom acted as a stronghold for the wise. The Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu had is what protected him when he argued against the Malachim. This is all the more true in the case of the heavenly forces that are sent to afflict humanity. They have no power over those who immerse themselves in limited Torah. People who live their lives only in limited Torah are in a different class as far as heaven's concerned as the decrees that go against people. They're just dealt with differently because of what they're doing. It changes their nature to the fact that heaven naturally deals differently with them. Okay, what does it mean that are in the city? So according to Rambam, the wise person is Moshe Rabbeinu, and the city is heaven. According to Rambam, in Yesod HaTorah, Perek Zion, right? But it's interesting, if you see Solomon himself in Mishlei, Proverbs, Chof Aleph, Chof Beis, 21:22, he says, a wise man scales the city of the mighty and brings down the stronghold where it trusts. Obviously, that's talking about basically the same thing, right? And the Medrash on Vayikra Rabba Lamed Aleph Hay 31:5 says Moshe ascended on high to the city in heaven of the ministering angels, who were armed with strength and carry out his word, as it says in Tehillim 103:20, and the Torah is the stronghold that came down to the world for us to trust. Same idea, basically in Mishlei. Essentially, in Mishlei 21:22, he's saying almost the same words that he's saying in Keheles 7:19. Basically, no different thing. It's almost exactly the same. Okay, what's this got to do with our theme of not being overly righteous? Because remember, we were in a theme of avoiding the crisis of faith. So we learnt that it is not a great thing to strive to be overly righteous, because if you do get to such a level, when you're punished for your wrongdoings, it'll be quick and severe. We know the Malachim that were in Sodom said, we are going to destroy this place. And even though they meant no harm by what they're saying to each other, they gave a false impression to humanity that they have independent power. God punished them. And it was those angels that Yaakov saw in his dream of the ladder going back up the ladder. It was the first time they allowed to go back. It was at least 130 years later. This is in the time of Avraham and Lot. And they'd been roaming the earth, not allowed to go back to heaven, because they said, we're going to destroy this place. Such a small indiscretion. Come on, go easy on them. No, they're archangels. Once you get to the level of being an archangel, your eyes are so open, you are so aware of what's going on. Making a misdemeanor like that is horrendous. The analogy is, if I personally were to go into a tour in Buckingham Palace and I got tired and I had to sit down, then someone comes in and starts screaming at me, saying, you've got to get up, you can't sit there. Why not? It's a chair. That's the throne! Oh my gosh, I'm so sorry, I had no idea. I thought it was just an ornate chair. I didn't know it was the throne. I don't know anything. What do? I'm not in and out Buckingham Palace. When do I see that? So as bad as it is, it's very forgivable. If you work in the palace day in, day out, and when no one's looking, you took your lunch break and sat and had your sandwiches while sitting on the throne, and your colleagues caught you at it. That's not okay. Why? You know that it's clear to you that that is not a chair for sitting on for anyone but the monarch. What did I know? I'm a stranger, a common outsider. I don't know anything. This guy, he's a royal servant. He lives and works in Buckingham Palace. He sits on the throne. That's horrendous. So too with the Malachim. So too with the very righteous. If a very righteous person makes a relatively minor misdemeanor, they hit real hard because of their proximity to the divine presence. What are you doing? So becoming overly righteous, apart from becoming a problem of crisis of faith if you aren't on the prerequisite emunah level, also actually becomes somewhat dangerous, because your relatively minor misdemeanors be punished harshly. But if you see that he's bearing hardship, that you're undergoing some kind of pain, you've got to understand how do you avoid a crisis of faith? You've got to understand that if you are bearing hardship, it's happening because a Kodesh Baruch Hu is trying to wipe the slate clean in order to make sure that you're completely squeaky clean for Olam Haba. He doesn't want you to perish. It's not going to be lethal. It'll be beneficial. But as bad as it will be, it'll be quick and bad and maybe quite hard. But the point is, you'll know if you're really holding that it's only for your benefit. So if you end up overly righteous and getting hit hard and you can't take that and you rebel and become heretical against God, going, you've made a mistake, like Eov said, then maybe it's better you don't get to that level to start with. If you know you're going to work in Buckingham Palace and end up getting discharged because you were having your sandwiches in the throne room, maybe it's better you wouldn't have got the job. Now, so far, that's the Rambam's interpretation of this pasuk. The Alshech HaKadosh has a different interpretation. He says beautifully, by quoting the Gemara in Adorim, Lamed Beis Amad Beis, the Gemara in Adorim 32b, says that wisdom is a stronghold. So when it says Hachochma ta'iz lachochm, wisdom is the castle, the stronghold, the mighty tower of the wise. You know what that means? It means tshuva and maisim tovim. It means repentance and good deeds. That's the wisdom you can do in this world. And that will act as a stronghold for you. That would be phenomenal if you can do it. What is more than 10 rulers? According to this, just a moment. What is more than 10 rulers? Those, if you go back to Yonah, if you remember, on the boat, with Yonah on the boat, we said that he went to sleep on the boat and then it stormed and it rocked and rocked. And all the sailors came up and started screaming at Yonah. Who are the sailors? We said they were the limbs and the organs of the body. Screaming at Yonah, who's the soul, saying, what have you done? What can you do to help us in this situation? Along almost identical lines, where the Alshech and the Gror both say that on Yonah, like word for word, so too here, when it comes to more than 10 rulers that are in the city, he says, these are the limbs of the body. Here they are, the mouth, the two eyes, the two ears, the two hands, the two feet, and the reproductive organ. Goes, those are your 10. Those are the 10 rulers in the city. So he says, the Alshech says, that it's basically impossible to transgress without involving one of those 10 limbs. Now, why isn't the heart listed? You'd have thought that the lave is going to be listed in that. So the Gemara Kedushin, Daf Mem Omad Aleph, that's 40a, explains that a wicked thought is not counted as an evil deed. Which means what? Even if the heart did have a bad intention, a bad desire, it's not punishable unless the limbs actually cash that check. An actual act is what's punishable. So what does it mean that Hachochma ta'iz lachochem? that wisdom is a stronghold of the wise. That means Maisim Tovim and Tshuva are your stronghold. Tshuva and Maisim Tovim will deter a person from carrying out any wickedness in his heart, even though his limbs, the 10 kings, the 10 rulers in the city, would be only too happy to do the Aveira. Very important lesson that we're learning out from this Gemara in Kiddushin, Daf Mem on Base. They say there, that also carries on in that Gemara, Mem on Base, that says that Torah study is so great because it brings a person to do good deeds. But a person who studies only a little will usually be led to sin. There's an amazing, amazing, there's a Talmud Yerushalmi, a Jerusalem Talmud in Nedarim, Zion Hay. That's Perek Zion Halacha Hay, or Mishnah Hay. And it says there that a young Rabbi Akiva, in his, after he had done tshuva at the age of 39, he was starting to get frum, like, and really get into it. And bizarrely, a very rare thing for us to find, please God, it's very unusual, he came upon a mace mitzvah. He just found a dead body in the street, and it required burial. And quite heroically, he picked up, or he dragged this dead body, for parsa, which is a significant distance, and finally laid it to rest in a Jewish cemetery. He walked it to the nearest base olam that he knew about, and he dug a grave, and he buried it full on. He did a great job. And he went and he told his rebbes, you know, Rabbi, I did a mitzvah, mace mitzvah. And the rebbes told him that he went to, that every single footstep he took was tantamount to murder. Why? A dead body that's a mace mitzvah and has no relatives, by Torah law, acquires the ground upon which it was found, and it needs to be buried in that spot, because that spot is owned by that person according to Torah law. You want to own a piece of land quickly? What a slum. One way is to, if Reuben wants that piece of land, Reuben drops dead on it, it's his. And you dig a hole right there and bury him in his grave, which he has purchased. He purchased it through his death. Rabbi Akiva didn't know that. He thought what he was doing was an incredible act of a mitzvah with Mesiras Nefesh, and frankly expected a Yashar Koach from all of his Rabbonim. Amazing, you know, get a brownie point, goes up in the shir, it's amazing. He said, what are you doing? When Rabbi Akiva learnt that it was his lack of knowledge about this topic that led to him being chastised in that manner, it said from then on in, he never left the company of the Chachamim. He knew wisdom is where it's at. You can think and justify to yourself, I'm sociologically behaving brilliantly, but according to the Torah's wisdom, terrible. Absolutely reprehensible. Excuse me, I was doing a massive mitzvah. Yeah, I understand why you think that, but you were wrong because you were ignorant. You didn't know. And not knowing is not a benefit. You can't say, well, I didn't know. Well, you didn't know. It's a problem. So the Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Nun Base, Amud Base, says that if you come upon a Yetzer Hara, you find your Yetzer Hara, drag it to the base of Medrash. Go to the base of Medrash. And if you look in Pirkei Avos, famously in Dalet, Tes Zayin, 4:16, a careless misinterpretation of the law is considered willful transgression. You didn't learn it correctly. What's all this got to do with what we're learning? What's happening? A man is compared to a small town. And the Yetzer Hara, as we said earlier on, a couple of parakim ago, was like an elderly king, an old king. The 10 limbs are the people that live in the city. Those are your limbs, the eyes, the ears, the nose, the mouth, the feet. And these are the rulers that control the body's action. And because the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, is generally the guf, it's generally your body, of course the limbs tend to side with the Yetzer Hara because they're actually your body. And against all this, the Yetzer HaTov would be powerless. And the ten limbs and the Yetzer Hara preceded the Yetzer Tov. There, you were born with that. You were born with your body, but you only got Yetzer Tov at your Bar Bas Mitzvah, which is your neshama. It's a new kid on the block. The only thing that can really come to the aid of the Yetzer HaTov in its fight against the Yetzer Hara is Torah wisdom. That's your best defense. That's your parity. You can blow it out of the water. You can literally shvitz a Yetzer Hara. David HaMelech shvitzed his Yetzer Hara out of him. But through Torah wisdom, it can be done. This is why we're told, if you meet the Yetzer Hara, drag him to the base of Midrash. That's the Gemara in Sukkah. As there, his power can be completely neutralized. Wisdom is a stronghold for the wise. Why? Because it allows you to serve God, fight your ten rulers, the limbs of the guf, and prevent your body from overcoming your soul. And at the end of the day, without that, they will be completely in control of your guf. Amazing, hey? So according to the Rambam, it's the ten classes of angels. And according to the Al-Sheikh and the Medrash, it's the ten limbs of the body. But either which way, wisdom was either Moses, in the first interpretation according to Rambam, or wisdom is Tshuva and Ma'asim Tovim, which allow a person to overcome the ten rulers of the city, the limbs of the body. All of this, Solomon had completely clear, both interpretations. He understood, Solomon for sure understood the Rambam, and he sure understood the Al-Sheikh, right? And when he sat down and penned this verse, he had all these ideas in mind. And he just succinctly condenses it into one sentence that fools will look at and say, I don't get it. Yeah, well, that's just the way it is. Unless you crack into Torah, you won't get it. It won't make sense. But when you've got it and you see it, like almost like an existential oneness, as Solomon saw it, like a living, breathing, singular thing, and he saw it so clearly, he can say words of wisdom like this that can take, what, half an hour just to explain on the most basic way to tell you the most fundamental truths, all squidged into one sentence. And he keeps doing it, sentence after sentence, chapter after chapter. It's just, again, to hold in conversation with him would have been amazing. You've got to have so much background data to hold in a straight conversation. His language was so high. One of the things we say on Yom Kippur, we beg God for forgiveness. There's no man that's so righteous that he's never sinned. You can't, please forgive us, because come on, sin's normal. Ki Adam ein sadik ba'aretz asher ya'aseh tov v'lo yechta. For there is not a righteous man upon the earth who does good and does not sin. And we use that pasuk as a crutch for tshuva on Yom Kippur. Even while you're doing good, you're off doing a mitzvah, you might slightly err. You ever heard of the idea of tshuva ma'asim tovim? Tshuva on your good deeds? Let's say you're at Tzadik Gomer, you go for Yom Kippur, right? Kol Nidre, you daven, you say vidui. What are you saying vidui over? Maybe other people's sins, if you're taking that on. But really, you're saying vidui on the fact that the mitzvahs you did, they were lacking. You didn't perfectly do tefillin. You haven't perfectly done tzitzis. Most people don't wear perfect tzitzis. Perfect tzitzis are done. The hiddur, the greatest hiddur in tzitzis, is where the gap between the knots is exactly the same. But if you have the minug where you have 7, 8, 11, 13, the gaps between the knots gets wider. So the way to do that is you have to spread out the first few groupings so the last two are as far, but that's mummish the best. And with the best material, with the best kavanas, Mamish like rapping it while saying the Shema. Did you do it the best like a malach would do it? No. You've erred. What do you mean? I'm making sense. I'm being a tzaddik. Yeah, but it's not the best way, is it? Even when you're doing a great mitzvah, you could, if you look at it under a microscope, you could have done that a bit better. Even the greatest man who commits a sin, however slight it may be, now has to atone for it through some kind of suffering. He won't perish, but now he's got to suffer. Oh, for goodness sake. You put your tefillin back in your bag and you put the yad, instead of to the left, you put it to the right. That means tomorrow morning, where you thought was on the left, you put out the rosh to start with. Shema Torah mitzvahs. You're over, you passed over a mitzvah. Now you've got to put that one down and pick up the yad. Nah, you just sinned. What? I'm such a good boy. I'm putting on tefillin. I've got tefillin. They cost tefillin. But you weren't careful. You put them away wrong, so now you've made a mistake. What is going on? Yeah, well, once you start going... Bing, where's my belt? Oh, I didn't bring up my belt. Bing, going off. If you're going to be a really good musician or a really good sportsman or a really good artist or a great dancer, you'll learn nothing is ever good enough. There's always more to achieve in any endeavor. You can't rest on your laurels. You can't say, I've got it. You keep beating your personal best, but there's always better to do. That, you know, you become the best ballet dancer. There's always more moves to do better. If you're going to be a musician, a pianist, there's always some complicated list that you just can't nail, or maybe you can't transpose Paganini to the... There's always something that's technically or beyond you. It's like that in anything. Bing, hit the bell, coming back. It's like that in Tyra. The greatest gedolim was still working as hard as the person that's not yet keeping kashrus. Just it's more refined. There's as many levels to go. It never ends. You could always learn that word a bit better. You could always don't waste another second. You could have always had more hislavas. You could have more ahavas Hashem, more Yerushalayim. Can you say you've reached the maximum amount of Yerushalayim available? Can you say that about yourself? Why not? Well, there you go. Then technically we could tick you off, even on the best mitzvah you've ever done. There's not a righteous man upon the earth who does good. Even Rabbi Akiva, who wanted to bury the dead, which had been abandoned as a mesa mitzvah, and did a mitzvah which was legendary of heroic status. Why didn't anyone help him? He dragged this dead person full parsa to the... And then he dug a grave, maybe with his own hands. My goodness gracious, you get a gold star diamond medal for that. What are you talking about? Every footstep was murder. He didn't realize it. The wisdom of the Torah prevents sin. Had Rabbi Akiva been more conversant with the law at that stage of his development, he became one of the greatest Tanaim that ever lived. But you don't that doesn't happen overnight. Okay, in the beginning, he was still learning the ropes. Even if you intend to do good, but you err, in Shemaim's books, you're still called a sinner. It's not like you're going out eating a beef burger, you know, a tray for one on Yom Kippur. That's really bad. But this guy, you know, he was a bit lackadaisical in the way he did that mitzvah. Didn't really check the mezuzah before he put it on the door, put it on upside down, or he didn't put it on in the right place. You know, you're meant to put a mezuzah the bottom of the top third of your doorframe. So you take a doorframe and you take a measurement, divide it by three, then you draw lines on it. Yeah? The bottom of the mezuzah should go onto the line which is the beginning of the top third. So if you see in many people's homes, the little mezuzah, which often isn't even kosher, is mounted way too high, tucked into the top right-hand corner of the door jamb. It actually has got to be quite low down. There's a whole reason why it should be bottom of the top third, the idea of three, and Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov, and what's going on. There's all these ideas. But we see how easy it is to make a mistake, even when you're trying to do a good deed. Did I tell you I had a car, and it broke down, and I kept it in my garage? And I got a penalty charge notice saying you haven't paid car tax on it. So I called out the DVLA and I said, well, I got news. This is before they now use cameras. You don't have to do anything. They're watching you the whole time. It's like mummish Big Brother. Nobody seems to be flinch. Everywhere your car is, they're checking on the computer. And if it hasn't been paid for, they'll send a team around to clamp the car at your home because they know which road you've been driving on. The whole thing's all done by computer. Everywhere you go, you're being watched. Nobody seems to freak out about it. In the old days, you had to pay money and get a tax disc, which you had to put in your windscreen. And I didn't do that because the car was in my garage. So I called up the DVLA, who's the licensing authority for vehicles in the United Kingdom. And I said, excuse me, I think there's been an error. My car's in my garage. It hasn't been running. It's actually broken down. There's a problem with the engine. And there was oil that got into the sump. It was really a hassle. And I said, listen, you know, there's no. It doesn't need road tax because it hasn't been on a UK road. It's been on private property. So the lady said, well, did you declare SORN, which is statutory off-road notification, to tell us that the vehicle's now off-road? And I said, no. She said, well, you owe us the £170. And I said, what? Okay, why do I owe it? I really genuinely didn't know I had to let them know that it's off-road. She said, ignorance is no defence in the eyes of the law. You own a car, you learn what that means, otherwise you pay for it. Finished. I had to pay. So she said to me, ignorance is no defence in the eyes of the law. Ignorance was no excuse for Rabbi Akiva to say, yeah, but I did a good deed. No, he didn't. That's because the law says you can't do it like that. The wisdom of Tyra keeps you on your aim of spiritual perfection. That's what we're aiming for here. How can you learn to do mitzvahs flawlessly without chochmah in Tyra? You won't just be able to, you won't guess it. You can guess close. You know, Avraham Avinu could really find mitzvahs pretty close. And he knew he had to eat matzahs on Pesach by looking into nature before the Jews went down to Egypt. I've got news for you. If you could go in a time machine and go back to his home and go into his tent and see Sarah Imenu, our great-great-great-great-grandmother, kneading those matzahs, could you eat them? Not a chance. Not kosher enough for you. You got the Shulchan Aruch. It's not kosher. Avraham Avinu and Sarah Imenu's hechsher not good enough for you? No. Shulchan Aruch. I need a Shulchan Aruch. I don't know if it's been 18 minutes. Yes, they're right. They've intuitively found the mitzvahs by looking into nature. And they know that non-leavened product is the way to go for Nissan. Very good. But real dikduk in the mitzvahs, that can only come from Torah wisdom. Not to say that, alavai, my matzahs should be as good as Simon's matzahs. But my matzahs have to be more kosher, according to Shulchan Aruch, because we're post-Matan Torah. We're no longer voluntarily keeping these laws. We are bound as slaves to God's will. We got to get it right. So now there's a code of law. Now, even though the wisdom of Tyra can help you achieve perfection, there is one very sticky Aveira, which is a bit of an exception to this. And that is the Aveira of Lashon Hara. And that is going to be the subject of the next few Pesukim. As good as you get in being Medakdek in the mitzvahs, nobody avoids even Avak Lashon Hara, the dust of Lashon Hara. And there's a famous Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Nun Vav Omad Aleph, which is 56a, regarding David HaMelech accepting Lashon Hara against a man called Mephibosheth. Now, Mephibosheth was a pretender to the crown. He had access to the crown. He's one of Shaul's relatives. And in the old days, in the medieval times, if a man got to the throne, it was the done thing that the king would kill anybody, any other princes or dukes that had any kind of pretense to the throne, to secure his position. It was just a done thing. It's a very bloodthirsty thing to do. But the rationale was that such behavior was for the stability of the government and the preservation of state So you've got to basically bump off anyone else that could say, excuse me, I think I could be on the throne. And David was hunting down Mephibosheth, not to kill him, but to find out how he was doing it. But Mephibosheth, as you can understand, was very scared of having anything to do with David HaMelech, because him getting found out might mean the chop. And if you look in Shmuel Peric Tes, that's Samuel 2, chapter 9, you'll see that David goes on an espionage, hunting, tracking down mission to find Mephibosheth in order to find out where he is. He's got to find out the rest of Shaul's family, and he wants to find out who he is. So he thought the best person to ask would be someone who is a servant of Shaul's house that's still alive. And he found a man called Tziva was a Gentile. He was a servant, a slave of King Shaul, who now belongs, because Shaul is dead, to the surviving family members. So he thought, look, as a slave who is going to be inherited, he for sure would know where the other family members are, because those are going to be his new owners. So if anyone knows where Mephibosheth is going to be, this Tziva is going to know. So he hunted him down and he found him. And he said to him, do you know where he is? And he said, oh yeah, I know where he is. He's in a place called Beloy Dovar. Loidavar, which literally means he said no thing or not a word. Really, the Gemara Shabbos means to say he was telling him as follows. You don't need to worry about that, Mephibosheth. He doesn't know a single word of Torah. He's an ignoramus. So he's no threat to you at all. He wanted to protect him, but he lied. He lied and he said slander against him. And he said, he's soft in the head. He doesn't know nothing. Don't worry about it. You don't need to find him. Now, he went, oh, okay. And David HaMelech, it seems, says the Gemara, accepted that. Point blank, at face value, from this slave, the Tziva, that said that. When he actually met Mephibosheth, who was a young man at the time, he was quite a learned scholar. And when David realized that, he'd realized he had taken on a slanderous report in this Tziva about him. So David, one of the most righteous men that's ever lived, accepted an evil report about this Mephibosheth from this Tziva who said that. Which tells us what? Even if you're as righteous as King David, you are susceptible to accepting Lashon Hara. You got to be real careful with Lashon Hara then. If we're saying Torah acts as a protectorate, you got to have that knowledge because there's no one so righteous who's never sinned, because you got to know your Torah to... Let's say you really are functioning on all burners and you're doing all mitzvahs correctly. With Lashon Hara, even then you're going to stumble. You're going to need Tata Dishmaya. Gam lechol ha-devarim asher yedaberu al titen libecha. Pay no attention to everything men say, lest you hear your own servant disparaging you. Oh, what's going on here? Wow. There are two very important precepts in this, and we need to talk about it. There's two really, really important. The first is the Aveira of Lifnei Aver, putting a stumbling block in front of the blind, which is literal. Don't go to put a banana peel in front of a blind man that's walking for a laugh. You're over derisive Aveira on that. Two is you're not allowed to give bad advice to people that don't know better, or to misuse the trust of others to say, oh, it's better to do this, and they don't know what's happening. That is a derisa mitzvah in Vayikra Yud Tes Yud Dalet. That's Leviticus 19:14. You can't do that. That's Aveira number one. There's then Vahavterecha Kamoicha. You have to love your neighbor as yourself. That's also in Vayikra Yud Tes, but that's Yud Ches. That's 19:18. These two mitzvahs are extremely intertwined with Lashon Hara. The concept of Lifnei Aver and Vahavterecha Kamoicha are linked through the Aveira of Lashon Hara. And most people don't understand how. And it's really important to get that clear so that we can understand, pay no attention to everything men say, lest you hear your own servant disparaging you. What's that got to do with a stumbling block and loving your fellow as yourself and Lashon Hara? And, because we're on the tails of this concept of Lashon Hara, what's going on? If you hear derogatory statements being made about a person, you may resent him for his wickedness. Ooh, really? He did that? What a rusher. Now, when that person hears that someone else has accepted those slanderous words of truth, Reuven told Levi that you ate bacon on Yom Kippur. So when that person hears that Reuven said that to Levi, and now Levi thinks of him as a Rasha, he'll curse that person even if he is his servant, because he'll suspect that the other has done wrong when in fact he may have done nothing wrong at all. So if the man who believes in slander has sinned, because by accepting the truth, he's placed a stumbling block in the path of the blind, because it's now inevitable that the person who was spoken against will curse him, transgressing, "You shall not curse the deaf," which is in 1914. It's the same pasuk as the stumbling block. "And you shall not curse a ruler of your people," in Exodus 22, 27. This is what Koheleth is talking about when he says, "Lest you hear even your own servant disparaging you." He's referencing this mitzvah, "You shall not curse a ruler of your people." Coming back to this thing with David HaMelech, with King David, accepting this slander against Mephibosheth, he accepted Siva's disregarding very disgruntling comments about him, saying, "Oh, well, he's an idiot." And he accepted that. And when Mephibosheth heard that David was shocked to hear that he was an ignoramus, David said, "Oh, you know, what's going on in this particular case?" Mephibosheth answered deridingly against King David to say to him, "You think I'm a fool? Let me tell you, I'm not a fool." He said he didn't trust Siva to take only his own share of the field that David was inquiring about, and he thought Siva should take everything after he has left the king in peace. What he really meant was, the king will die here and then we can take all of our fields and not have anything to worry about. Why was he speaking badly about King David? Because there's a guy that hates me. He believes Lashon Hara against me. Why should I like him? See, Lashon Hara of Tziva to David that got found out by the actual subject of the Lashon Hara, Mephibosheth, ended up being Mephibosheth was rude to David, thinking, well, he hates me. He accepts slander against me. Therefore, you see that putting a Lifnei Aver, putting a stumbling block in front of the blind, is that you're causing the person who was slandered against now to do bad things to the people that have accepted the slander because he feels bad about them. And you've broken V'haftarecha Kamoicha. He can't love that person as himself. He thinks this person accepts slander against me, and he's bound to do bad things about it. This is the concept of pay no attention to everything men say. Be very careful not to be Makabel Lashon Hara. Because if you do, and people hate you for what you've heard, you're going to be causing Lifnei Aver. You're going to be putting a stumbling block in front of the blind. Ki gam pa'amim rabbi siyada libecha asher gam ata klata acherim. Your own conscience knows that many times you yourself have disparaged others. V'haftarecha kamaicha. When you curse others, you want them to forgive you, right? You're sorry you said what you said about someone. Just like you hope they'll forgive you for the things you said about them. All these concepts, everything we're talking about, is only in the hope that you can improve yourself, improve your Torah and your mitzvahs, in order to be able to be more worthy in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Pasuk Chof Gimel explains this. Kol zon sisi v'chochma. All this have I tried by wisdom, have I put to the test of wisdom. And I said, Amarti, Echkoma. I'm going to get wisdom. I'm going to acquire it. For he rachaka mimeni. But it was far from me. I thought I'd just walk in and chap chokhma. It's just easy for me. Remember, Solomon was given a gift of chokhma. But I got news for you. When I really delved into it, it wasn't so easy at all. Shlomo as Keheles, in his retrospective on life, is telling us he's tried this. He's tried this chokhma depth approach. And although it is true that you could get there, it's a near impossible task to attain. Solomon's first ambition was to gain insight into wisdom by learning from his Rabbonim. So he was dovik to his Rebbes, very, very close. But the thing is, Torah can't be acquired simply by learning from others. You've got to know how to compare halachic statements and derive the law one from the other according to those principles in your own mind, and therefore intellect and logical methods in your own mind need to be developed for you to be able to apply the law correctly. There's no other way. You're going to have to work yourself. There's only so much you can get from other people teaching. You're going to have to really get it yourself. Now, it's so interesting, by the way, there's an interesting idea that Moshe Rabbeinu knew all the Torah. So if you want to say, well, if I learn something, whatever a student has derived himself, really Moshe Rabbeinu knew. Well, it isn't that he doesn't need to derive it from another source. It's just that he's understanding the ideas that Moshe Rabbeinu was aware of. And he's applying them in maybe ways that Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know about scuba gear, but he knew all the laws that would fit to scuba gear. So he's saying, you know, you can try and work and get chokhmah, but at the end of the day, there's always so much more that's going to elude you. He didn't get it all. This also talks about the Parah Aduma. He tried very, very much to understand the mystical reasons as to how the red heifer makes those who are involved with it impure, but purifies everyone else that is touched by it. He couldn't get it. He was just beyond him. He didn't understand the chokhmah of how this works. Rechaik masha hayav oimek, oimek yi yimitsenu. That which is far off, exceedingly deep. Who can find it out? Even though he's applied all the halachic rules and principles, which you've got to have to derive a particular point from the Torah, it's still exceedingly deep, exceedingly profound. So much so that even though he originally knew all the laws and precepts, he's lost them. It's just like once he's that deep in, he doesn't understand how they apply. So who can find out? It's completely beyond human thought. So boisiani v'libi lidas lasu uvakesh chokhma v'cheshboin. I turned around and I applied my heart to know and to seek out and to seek the wisdom and reason of things. Ladas resha kesel v'sichlois hailelois. And to know wickedness to be folly and foolishness to be madness. Solomon is saying that he studied so diligently, there wasn't an element of the entire Torah which he was ignorant of. He literally studied every subject in the entire Torah. And when it says, I turned about, sovev, loshen sivivon, like sovev, to spin about, it means that he learned them so thoroughly that he wouldn't forget them. He'd go over and over and over and over every topic, turning them around and around and around to make sure he truly mastered each concept. And when it says, v'libi ledas v'lasur, my heart, it means that he was like a traveler who visits a new place and wants to learn everything about it, like a tourist who visits every museum, trying to figure out in this town what goes on, where he was. He had the same inquisitiveness as someone that was new to it, but the same depth of knowledge as the curator of the museum. But he says, wisdom's not the only important thing in life. You've got to present the sum account of all your actions to the creator, not just what you were wise in. You can't just say, well, I was very wise. That's very nice. And what else did you do? No, I was I was very wise. Well, no, no, that was my mastermind subject was wisdom. Didn't do anything else. You know what I mean? I got good at that. Torah's great, we said earlier from the Kedushin Memamah base, because it leads you to do good deeds. It's those deeds which really count in the heavenly court's analysis of your life. They may weigh up your deeds and say, you know, he wasn't very wise, but he did lots of mitzvahs. This guy was very wise and didn't do any mitzvahs. Doing mitzvahs is more important, bottom line, in the money in the bank. Obviously, in order to do those mitzvahs, you can need wisdom to be able to do them correctly. As we have learned, Rabbi Akiva, the case in point. We said that a careless misinterpretation is considered tantamount to deliberate transgression. That was the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Perek Dalad. And we, what does that mean? He says, it's considered madness. If you distort the intended meaning of the Torah's words to misinterpret it, you've literally fallen into insanity. Don't bend the Torah's words for some other ulterior motive. It's literally insane. It'll make everything worthless. If you're careful in your ways and you concern yourself with the mitzvah and you try to gain wisdom and the reason of things, you'll realize the effect that sin has on your character. And you'll know that your own folly, which will bring you to sin, will damage your very personality. It's not enough to simply learn from others. You've got to strive yourself to gain wisdom of Torah, become acquainted with it, and Koheles himself did this, but he was bothered by one particular topic. Women. Didn't make sense to him. He had a tough time with women. Women were the bane of his life and essentially caused his downfall. And what's happened is now that we've kind of got to the denouement, the end of chapter 7, and the last few psukim on chapter 7, last three or four psukim that we're going to talk about now, are his experiences with women that essentially for him were basically pretty negative. He had too many wives and all of them were no good. No one really did a decent wifely job for him. And because of that, he had a very hard time. He lost a lot of his wisdom and his prestige and his honor and his place, basically because of women. And that's what he's going to talk about next time. So what we'll do is start off the seventh perek with Pasuk Chof Vov, that's 26. And then there's four psukim that we need to do to get to Chof Tes, and that will conclude the seventh chapter. And that actually runs into the eighth chapter, which has themes of the concept of fate and avoiding crises of faith. Again, something we have touched upon in this parak. I wanted to thank you very, very much for taking out your time for being here tonight. I really appreciate it. And if there's any questions, now is the time.